The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening and welcome back. And while we're waiting people to come in, we can this evening also take a few minutes for questions if you have. Questions, comments, reports about your meditation. Be nice to hear from you a little bit before I start.
So I have a question related to last week. We talked about bringing mindfulness to our emotions. So if you're feeling an emotion, to recognize, investigate, name. So I tried that, and it was good, but I'm wondering, like, sort of then what? Because I didn't necessarily feel better, and it didn't make the emotion go away. And I thought, well, okay, now that I know what it is, and I know where it is in my body, that doesn't necessarily make me feel better. Maybe it's not supposed to.
Yes, but does it make you wiser?
Yeah.
In what way?
Well, I had to think about the feeling and what it was, if it was just general anxiety or fear, or what kind of fear. So I learned that.
Uh-huh.
And then learned where it was.
Mm-hmm. Did you live or act or relate to the fear differently than you would have normally? The fear didn't go away, but did you relate to it differently? Did it have a different impact on you?
I guess it didn't bother me as much. I mean, because it didn't fuel a sense of anxiety. I didn't feel like I had to run away from it as much as I normally do.
Uh-huh. I think this is fantastic.
Okay. Now you're making me eat my words.
Thank you for saying that very much, because it's certainly nice to have some things that are uncomfortable go away, and this whole Buddhist practice, or the mindfulness practice, is meant to help us become happier, more peaceful, and not be caught in the grip of different things. It's best not to do a frontal assault on what we don't want and to make it go away. That's just kind of the usual approach. We do it a little more indirectly, and that is that we learn a different skill than making things something go away. We learn the skill of how to be present for it in a peaceful way. And we learn to be present for it in a way we're not in conflict with it, we're not in troubled by it. And we learn to relate to it a different way. And learning that skill to be mindful of things as they are without having them to go away, that's a portable skill. That's something you take into all kinds of circumstances. The learning how to let go of things and make something go away, you could be successful sometimes, but chances are you're not going to be universally successful. And so then if you can't get it to go away, then you're confused, lost, feel like I failed, or I'm a spiritual dunce, or something. But the main thing, the first thing we tried to do here is to learn how to be present in a peaceful, equanimous way. Now, one of the advantages of that is that some things don't go away, but we become wiser in relationship to them. We're less bothered by them. And there are all kinds of conditions in life where we can't expect it to go away. Sometimes there's a pain arises and there's no opportunity for medication or for anything. And so if you know how to be present for something that's extremely uncomfortable without succumbing to fear or hatred or confusion or pity, but learn how to call on your wisdom, then you might figure out what to do, how to get out of the predicament you're in. You know, if you're up hiking in the mountains up here and you're all alone and you, I don't know, you injure yourself and, you know, it hurts. And it's, you know, you're confused and lost. And then you say, oh, recognize what's happening. Allow for it in awareness. Investigate it. Try to name it. and try to kind of find that place of balance. And then with that wisdom, then maybe you can manage better to take care of your predicament. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So is it good enough for you?
Yes,
for now. Oh, good. Good enough.
For now. Thank you.
Someone else? Yes. Up here by the entry.
Now it should be on?
Yeah. So last week we talked about loving kindness, and that's something that I usually go to when I feel a strong emotion, but I didn't do that a couple times. And I found it really helpful what you had said about and I'd heard this before, but when you said it kind of really resonated, not shooting the second arrow. So I think that's kind of something that is really important, that like you don't have to tell, you know, you kind of catch yourself telling a story and then realizing, all right,
great.
If I can at least just let that story go, then I can sit with this knowing it's temporary.
Right, or maybe even if it's not temporary, you know, if people can be depressed for some time and it's bad enough. You know, so please don't do the second arrows.
Yeah, the second arrow thing. And also not taking it personally.
Not taking it personally, yeah. And that's some things are bad, but it's just so much better not to kind of add all these second arrows.
Yeah.
And it counts for a lot. And one of the things that's helpful but not adding second arrows is second arrows, the limitation they put us under, limits the possibility of healing or change or resolution or something different happening. It's kind of like puts it in a box. Great, great, lovely. Yeah, please. Okay, right. Yeah.
Thank you. Hi, so I had two experiences when I was actually practicing the meditation, and I would feel an emotion, usually because my mind had wandered onto a particular situation, and then I would try to step back and observe it. Like you mentioned last week, it would disappear. It just kind of went poof and disappeared. And then I couldn't find it. And then I was like, wait, what happened to it? And then I started thinking, almost like I was trying to manufacture it.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. And then I couldn't get back to it. So I would eventually go back to my breath and try to kind of start over.
Great. Oh, congratulations. I take that as a good sign that it went away. You know, take it as a good sign if it stays. there's different levels of or degrees of emotions, and so emotions which are not, there's not a lot of juice behind them. What keeps them going is the stories we tell ourselves, and if you bring careful mindfulness to it, we stop telling stories, and the fuel for it dissipates, and some emotions disappear very quickly. In fact, some of you might know this, the study better than I do, but I read some time ago a study where someone measured if you don't add anything or keep refueling an emotion, it only lasts something like ridiculously short a period of time. I forget, like 3-4 seconds. Did anybody read that study? What?
I think it might be 19 seconds.
Oh, 19 seconds. Oh, it's a long time. 19 seconds. And it seems kind of ridiculous, right? Because most of us, you know, have our emotions sometimes last much longer. But when you sometimes there's momentum. It takes a while for it to dissipate or the story mind to quiet. But so if it's very light, it'll dissipate, it'll disappear. Especially if it's a negative emotion. Certain positive emotions might disappear as well if the positive emotion is dependent on a story. However, there are positive emotions that arise without needing to have a story. And this is one of the things that we can expect as meditation deepens. A lot of joy, happiness, peace can bubble up, a sense of compassion. And it doesn't require a story, and actually can get stronger and more stable over time. And then there are emotions where, for whatever reason, they're much more embedded, they're stronger, maybe there's more fuel for them, or we dumped a whole bunch of gasoline on them yesterday, and it takes a while for it to burn off. And so then you can't expect them to go away, but then you can try not to do the second arrows. But I what you did was a very common thing, I think, that people will practice mindfulness emotions, the emotion will go away, and they think something is wrong.
Yeah, and then they start. I started looking for it to see if I could find it and maybe create it. But the second experience I had felt, well, now I'm judging, it felt much more productive in a way. One of the exercises on the sheet was when you, sometime during the day when you feel an emotion, to ride with it. And the first couple of times, again, it would disappear, but then after I don't know, trying it a couple of times, I found that I was able to ride with it, and then it became more calm. So the tension that I was that initially came with it relaxed, my breathing slowed, and then I was able to kind of look at it and say, okay, I understand what this is, okay. And then actually it did feel like it went away quite quickly, and then I was like, okay, now am I allowed to go on and do what I was doing?
Great.
But it felt much more positive that I had gone through it.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm very happy to hear that then. So you kind of allowed it to be there, but you accompanied it. You stayed with it, and so you didn't kind of forget about it, and it kind of had a chance to dissipate. And for some people who have addictions, this can be very powerful, to feel this tremendous pull of an addiction. You have to do your thing, and you know it can be quite almost feel like life and death sometimes, and just stay in your easy chair, or in the, you know, don't leave, and ride it out to the other side. And what all things have a lifetime, all these emotions, all these desires. And so you ride it out, break into sweat if you have to, but just don't leave the chair until finally the wave breaks and you find yourself on the backside of the wave, and then you know it gets quieter again. And people who do this, people who have like strong addictions, find that this is very encouraging. It shows them they have the ability to withstand or override or stay strong in the middle of these things and just wait it out. And so it's a very useful skill. Okay, so today the topic is mindfulness of thinking. I know some of you have been little prodigies who've, you know, been ahead of the curve here, doing some thinking already. But now you're going to be allowed to think, finally. Because one of the things, as I've said, about this mindfulness practice, we don't set up a division between what is acceptable and not acceptable, what is appropriate and not appropriate for awareness, for mindfulness. And what makes this mindfulness practice very special is that all things are included. There's nothing excluded from the domain of what we can pay attention to. And this is such a special thing that I like to think of this as that this is sacred in Buddhism. That the awareness that excludes nothing is a sacred awareness. As soon as you put up divisions, say, this is not acceptable, I'm not going to pay attention to that, I'm going to shut down to that, then the sacred disappears and we're back in the profane world. There's something very special about kind of having this ability to be willing to be present for everything. And so the same thing then applies to thinking. Many people who meditate will relate to thinking as the enemy, as the problem. If only I wasn't thinking, then I could really meditate. But thinking can be a challenge, but the art of mindfulness is, rather than rejecting thinking or being aversive to it or having second arrows towards it, we just turn our attention and we do mindfulness of thinking. And so I'll talk about how that's done today. So it becomes an object of attention rather than a distraction from attention. And as I've said, in this mindfulness practice, there are no distractions. If you think there's a distraction, you've divided up the universe between what's acceptable and not acceptable. There are no distractions, there are just other things to pay attention to. So if there's a strong bout of thinking, we turn and look at that. So in a few minutes, I'll do a little exercise, a little about thinking with you. But first I want to tell you a little teaching story, or a parable, simile. You go for a nice hike on a day off, through the oak woodlands. And it's a beautiful day, comfortable temperature, blue skies. And you come to a nice lunch spot against an oak tree by a river. And you sit down and you eat your lunch. And it's beautiful to watch the river water go by. And it's very nice. And then it's so comfortable and nice that you kind of even take a nap. And you wake up and you're so refreshed and so content. And everything just seems right. And you're just laying there and watching the river or the sky. And just, you know, like you just feel safe and happy and no worries, no concerns whatsoever. It's pretty good. And then you see upriver, coming down the river, is a big showboat with flashing lights and bands and casinos and dancers and, you know, all the kind of pleasures that are the most attractive to you. And they are just like, you know, on the deck, and they're come, they're waving. And the next thing you know, you're on that boat. But you don't realize you're on the boat for a couple of months. And then you kind of, wait, what am I doing on the boat? I was so happy and peaceful. Things were so perfect back there under that oak tree. So it takes a while before the boat docks somewhere and you can figure out how to get past the crowds. And it's not so easy to get off this boat. But finally you get off, and finally you do the long trek back up to where that oak tree is, and you sit down. Ah, finally I'm back. I'm home. This is great. And then coming down the river is a war boat fighting for the great cause. And before you know it, you're helping. You're on the boat, fighting the great cause, justice in the world, whatever you have to fight for. And it takes not just a few months to realize you're on the boat, it takes a couple of years to get off this one. All the resentments and anger and hostility and all the things, right? But finally you realize where you are and you get off the boat. You come back up to the river, find the oak tree, and say, I'm finally home. This is great. This is where I'll be. This is perfect, and I don't need to go into any boats, and because this, I have everything I need here, at least for now. But lo and behold, another boat comes down the river. This is a poor, little, decrepit, almost sunken raft. It's just like you feel so sorry for this little thing that's just like barely making it. And lo and behold, after some time, you discover you've been on that raft for a while, full of self-pity. Why am I on this poor raft? It's so hard, so difficult. And you're on the self-pity raft. And that takes a long time to get off of. So mindfulness has a lot to do about staying on the secure, safe shore. And the boats are the thoughts that come by. And the question is, do you get on the boats or not? And hopefully with mindfulness, you'll think. You'll have all kinds of thoughts. But you don't have to get on them. You don't have to pick them up. You don't have to engage with them. A thought can just go by. It can be the most interesting thought in the world, and you just don't have to think about it or explore it or come to conclusions about it. There can be the great war. You can think about who you have resentment for. You know, your high school date that stood you up 40 years ago. And that it comes up in your mind, and, you know, you find yourself, you know, for 10 minutes, kind of like, you know, fighting that war one more time, even though you have no idea where that person that lives anymore. You're not even sure their name anymore. But, you know, you're in it. So the idea of being able to stay present enough to notice that the thought appears, that it comes across the screen, or whatever way you do it, and then you leave it alone. And just know, oh, there's a thought. That's the thought, and I'm here. And I can just know it. But I'm not the thought. We don't identify with the thought. We don't become the thought. We just let it be. Some people are so wedded to their thinking, so involved in their thinking, that basically they think that that thinking is who they are. That's how they think about themselves, how they identify themselves, how they orient themselves in the world, how they find themselves in relationship to other people, is all through the medium of what they're thinking. And so the idea that they're not their thoughts is, some people is a little bit disorienting. But we don't have to be your thoughts. They're just, thoughts are, you know, can be a dime a dozen. They come and go, and, you know, you just kind of see them, and some thoughts are valuable, and sometimes it's important to get on the boats and get involved in thinking about them. But to not have to get on the boats is part of the power that comes from this mindfulness practice. Make some sense? So put on your life vest, and we'll go head out in the water. So, taking a posture that expresses a little bit of alertness, an alert spine. But also a posture where you feel comfortable. Comfortable and alert. And then, to help you make the transition from whatever you were thinking or doing to really trying to be here, rooted here, connected here, in this time, in this place, you can do a few long, slow, deep breaths, closing your eyes, and breathe deeply, really filling your chest, lifting your shoulders as you breathe in. And then as you exhale, do so slowly, and as you exhale, relax, soften. See if there can be a gentling of yourself. Feeling your body more fully as you breathe in, and gentling the body, softening it, relaxing as you exhale. And then letting your breathing return to normal. Then starting in your face, see if there's any muscles that might be easy enough to relax, soften. Maybe softening a bit around the eyes, letting the eyes rest in their sockets. There's no need to use your eyes when you're meditating with the eyes closed. No need to try to see. In softening, relaxing the jaw, cheeks. And as you exhale, relaxing the shoulders. And also it can be helpful to soften the belly. Maybe letting the belly hang forward or hang down. And then within your body, as part of your physical experience, become aware of how the body experiences breathing. The movement, the sensations in your body as you breathe. It might be in the area of your movements of your chest or your belly, the air going in and out through your nose, And for three breaths, each time you exhale, see if you can kind of like settle down into your breathing. Settle down into that experience of breathing as if you're kind of settling down into a comfortable chair. Let yourself breathe normally, and for just a minute or so, ride the rhythm of breathing, ride the cycle, breathing in and breathing out. And as you exhale, see if you can let the mind become quieter, letting go of your thoughts. And now you can stop paying attention to your breathing and instead calmly let yourself become aware of yourself thinking. Some people think in words, some people think in images. Step away from those, turn around and look at them, and be clearly aware that you're thinking. To help you recognize or acknowledge the fact, you could very softly in your mind acknowledge your thinking with the word thinking, thinking. And it's completely fine that you're thinking. All you're asked to do is to be aware of the fact that you're thinking. If thinking goes away, then you can go to your breathing until you start thinking again. And when you do, don't let go of it. Just know it for what it is. By clearly knowing that you're thinking, or maybe calmly naming it thinking, perhaps you can avoid getting on the boat. Just let it float by. There's no requirement to get involved. Let it be, but be clearly aware that you're thinking. And then now, calmly bring your attention back to your breathing. And kind of give yourself over to attention to breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. But if if there's thoughts in the background, just let them be there. Let the boats float by. Don't get involved. If there are strong thoughts or you get involved in thoughts, then let go of the breathing and look those thoughts right in the eye. I see you, thoughts. I see you thinking. See it for what it is. But calmly, peacefully. No need to be for or against your thoughts. Just know them as they occur. If it's really clear that your thoughts involve remembering or planning or fantasy, you might just very softly acknowledge it with those words. Not just acknowledge it with the word thinking, but planning. And saying those simple words is a way of staying on the dry, safe shore. And not getting on the boat. If you find yourself thinking, thinking a lot, see if you can notice if there's any emotion connected to those thoughts. And if there is, see if you can do the simple mindfulness of emotion. And then to end this sitting, you can take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So one of the most useful instructions I received about thinking during meditation was the instruction not to be bothered by my thinking. And that helped me a lot because I had been bothered by it. I shouldn't be thinking, my thinking is wrong, I shouldn't be thinking these things, all kinds of thoughts, but not be bothered by them. And what that did, not being bothered by them, was that I think earlier in the course I talked about the pond that settles, the muddy pond. So if the mud in the pond of your mind are your thoughts, and they're agitated and they're spinning around, if you leave them alone, they're more likely to settle and get quiet. But if you're bothered by them, and attacking them and trying to get them away, pushing them away, you're paradoxically, you're kind of like stirring up the water some more. And so then they stay in solution. So there's the very opposite of what you're trying to do. So just leave them alone. Just not be bothered. But if thoughts are subtle and quiet, kind of weak, you don't really, and in the background, you don't need to do anything. Just stay with the breathing, stay with whatever you're paying attention to. But if the thoughts come into the foreground of attention, and they kind of you're pulled into them, you're involved with them, or they're really, you know, loud, and then the practice is to let go of the breathing and bring your attention to mindfulness of thinking, like we did in this little meditation. I'd like to hear from some of you what that was like. What happened when you started bringing your attention to? Is there a mic?
I've noticed this before, but this time in particular, I noticed myself thinking about what I was feeling, and then my heart starts beating faster, and I feel kind of constricted. So what's the relationship between thinking and feeling?
Great. There's an intimate connection. And sometimes you'll see that you have a thought, and that has like a direct channel to your feelings, and your feelings will be aroused. And sometimes you'll see it the other direction. Some emotion or feeling will somehow bubble up, And then you'll see that in the wake of that, you start thinking about something. There can be a cause and effect relationship, because our psychophysical system is not, there's not hermetically sealed from itself. So all these different, you know, like different compartments. Thinking is intimately connected to our physical body, to our emotional life. And in fact, many of our emotions have their genesis in our thoughts. So yeah, that's what happens. So were you able to step away and see those thoughts as just another boat and not kind of be so involved that the way usually would be, or?
No, not really. In fact, in some ways, the more I meditate, the more kind of intent, I mean, the more I'm aware that I'm thinking of what I'm feeling, whether it's the tingling in my face or my heart beating or my breath coming in. So,
So one of the functions of this meditation is to highlight some of the common operating systems we have, some of the common tendencies we have. And sometimes they get highlighted, we see them stronger. But unless we can see them clearly, there's no way to the other side of them. And occasionally things get a little bit worse in meditation, because as certain tendencies stand out, we get involved with them more, we get pulled into their orbit more quickly. And so for a while, it might actually get more agitated rather than less. Don't be bothered. It's just it means there's something for you to work through, something for you to understand, to see, something for you to learn to relax with and be tender towards, be kind towards, and that, you know, the more kind you can be to this stuff, the easier it is. So now, if it gets out of hand, like really, I mean, some people might have a panic attack, you know, because of what we're talking about here is kind of this. Then probably just open your eyes and look around and take a deep breath and start over again. Someone else? What happened when you looked at your thoughts this way?
I just found at the beginning I wasn't even listening to what you were saying, because I... And then all of a sudden I heard you say...
You mean I was competing with you?
I was sitting all the time, oh, that's right, I'm thinking. Uh-huh. You know, I heard you say, you know, somewhere in there I heard you say something, and it brought me to the fact that I need to settle down. But I was so immediately thinking. It was just, it was a lot.
That can happen. I'm glad you saw it. And we'll probably do another exercise, which will be interesting for you in a little bit. But once you saw it, were you able to get off the boat?
Yeah, I was able to. And then, you know, the thoughts kept coming, but I was able to say, okay, I'm thinking.
Great.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what shifted for you when you did that?
I relaxed more. I guess I was able to let go a bit more.
Great. Thank you. Someone else?
I appreciate the imagery a lot, because I'm a very visual person and that's how I engage the world. So my boats were coming down the river and they had logos on the side of them, like work or dinner or, you know, planning or calendar, you know. And as I started to engage them, they visually came much closer to me. And I could see myself starting to get on the boat. And then I was like, you don't want to get on the boat. So the visual was really helpful in playing with how to be in proximity to these thoughts.
Uh-huh. Fantastic. And it gave you a different way of being with them than maybe you normally would?
Yes, absolutely. I was mindful of the relationship my mind was engaging with.
Fantastic. And there was some choice then.
Absolutely.
Of how much to engage.
Right.
Very nice. Thank you. One more?
Go ahead. Actually, this session was more like, in my opinion, it was almost like, compared to the others, more devoid of thought, like the idea of the boats going down the river. Like, I had the occasional pop-up of, like, things that have been on my mind more recently, but I felt more capable of just letting them go by, and it was relaxing. And also, I feel like before going into this session, like, my first experience with meditation was through an old mentor of mine, and his thing was, like, you can observe your thoughts, like, you can recognize who you were before and after the thought. So a fundamental rule of science is, if you can observe something, that something is not you. And so that was very...
Was that freeing?
What?
Was that freeing?
Yeah. And I feel like that kind of prepared me for today's session and made it very easy, in my opinion.
I'm happy to hear this. Great. Thank you. How many of you, when I finally said, okay, now let go of your breath, and now you can turn, actually look at things, you're allowed to think, and just be aware of yourself thinking. How many of you found that your thoughts kind of faded away? What? You didn't do the exercise?
I was already thinking before you told me.
That this is one of the things that can happen, right? That our thinking persists through time because we're involved in the thoughts. We're feeding them and fueling them. And if you stop feeding them, if the energy goes to being aware of them rather than the energy going to feeding them, they don't persist, they fade away. And some people are kind of stunned. They, you know, they've been struggling in meditation for a long time with their thoughts. They're trying to bat them away, stop thinking, let go. And then when they finally just calmly turn around and look at it, as if they have all the time in the world just to be aware of thinking, it's not a problem anymore. They might fade away. There's a difference. There's one more thing. There's a difference between thinking and thoughting. Thoughting is what the mind does. The mind doesn't have to inherently think. Thinking happens when you get involved with your thoughts and you get kind of go from one to the other and build on them and react to them and comment on them and all this stuff. So thoughts are just a normal part. They'll come by. They'll come and go. They'll arise and pass. But it's possible to not string them together into thinking. Just let them be thoughts. But yeah, so you wanted to say something.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily have some bad thinking. I think I can control that okay. But I have way too many thinking, right? So
yeah, wait.
A lot of different thinking going on. Uh-huh. Right? So I see not only one boat coming down the river, but I see maybe 1,000 at the same time.
Yeah.
And I jump into one another, and you know, that takes seconds, right? Yeah. So I think it was good for me to, for a moment, don't see any boats coming, right?
You see an armada.
Exactly. And when you said thinking, right, I could actually pick the ones that thought, you know, were important at the moment. So.
Good. That's great. Yeah, sometimes there can be so much happening all at once that to notice the specifics is too much work. And sometimes you want to step back and just to get the picture of the whole thing. And one of the ways to do it, if there's a lot of agitated thoughts and coming one after the other, all coming together, is to ask yourself, what are you feeling? What's the emotion? Is there a common emotion to the whole river that's showing itself? Do you think there might have been for you? Yeah, was there a particular emotion that seems to have kind of characterized the whole scene?
I think it's a feeling of peace. Right? Because, you know, I feel that I have a super busy life.
Uh-huh.
And it is so nice for a moment to think about, hey, this is probably peace for me.
Nice.
So you can rest and relax and decompress.
Nice. So, you could watch these different boats' thoughts go by, but you didn't get involved, and there was a peaceful place. Great, lovely. So right here in the front, if you can move it to the...
So this was a really interesting exercise, but there's that category of thoughts of like things I've been avoiding thinking about in the first place, like the you should really call your mother thoughts, or the ooh, that one thing I like just don't really want to address. And so when those thoughts came by, I was like, yeah, send them down the river. Don't want those ones. Right? But then I was like, this is probably not the mindful way of dealing with it, although it was convenient at the moment. I was like, I don't have to think about that right now, which is true, but how do you kind of pick those thoughts up maybe later or during the
exercise? Well, yeah, I think it's a wise thing to... There are some thoughts are useful to have. And just say it later. Put them up on the shelf, if I change the metaphor. You know, and I'll deal with that later. And sometimes the mind then can put it to rest. Oh, yeah, there'll be a time for this. But if the mind doesn't have a time, no, it's going to be a time, then it's going to keep insisting. Okay. Oh, okay.
So my thoughts oftentimes come in the form of conversations.
Yes.
Which is really can be kind of annoying.
Yes.
Because I'll replay an entire conversation in my mind. And it's like, so right now when we were doing this, one conversation that I had right before I came here, it was kind of a sensitive conversation. And when I was having that conversation, these two people, I was very aware, okay, anything you say now can really affect someone emotionally. And so that conversation started coming into my mind. And then I would hear the words, and I would pause. And it was, I didn't know how to interact with it because I could feel and sense the emotions that the other people were having. So I said, well, what do I do with this? So I tried to put a label on it. Maybe I'm feeling guilty or fearful. And then I could see it in the light of that fear or that maybe that guilt. Yeah. Or I don't know if guilt is a very strong word, but at the time I had a fear of like, okay, I got to be careful here because if I say something that could really hurt this person's feelings, you know, I was aware of that, thankfully. But it has to do with a girl who's in a hospital now. Yeah. And that allowed me to sort of, you know, let it go. It's kind of happening right now, right? Something that's happening right now. So you're in the middle of this emotional maelstrom, you know. And so you're, so that allowed it to sort of allow, because I was in the conversation. Right. I could see. Right. I was right there. I was on the boat. Right. Put it that way. And it sort of allowed me to disembark and go back
by
to
noticing
the
emotion.
Yeah, just understanding where this was coming from, like a sense of like, man, I hope I don't hurt somebody's feelings. Let me be careful. This is a very sensitive area in other people's lives, you know, and my life. So
nice. So what you're seeing here is that thinking is not just a singular thing, but it's something that comes together with many other things. It comes together with emotions and concerns, and projections and memories, and many things come together to kind of strengthen them, feed them, going on. If thinking is really persistent, really strong thinking, if you're on the boat and you can't stop thinking, or you can get off the boat easily enough, you can let go, but immediately you're back on. Just the thoughts come back, just keep reappearing. Then you want to stop letting go, and you want to be present for it. But one of the things you might look at is see what is the emotion that underlies it. Is there an emotion connected to it? Because sometimes what's the thinking is like the flag that says, hey, you, over here, pay attention here. And what needs attention is not the thinking, but is the emotion underneath it. So, for example, people who spend a lot of time planning, chances are a high percentage of those people of planning thoughts in meditation, underlying it is anxiety. And so there's going to be worry. And so if you can, if you kind of notice your thinking and let go of the thoughts, the anxiety is not attended to, hasn't been met. And so it will produce more thoughts. It's like the factory is still operating. And so you have to kind of drop below the, into the factory, into the source, which is coming out of the anxiety, and then do mindfulness of fear, of anxiety. Sometimes people think a lot about the past. Sometimes it's fueled by delight. Oh, that was a great time, and you know, thinking about reviewing it and feeling happy. Or it might be resentment. Boy, how could they have done that? And what needs attention is the underlying emotion. Feel that. And then there's less need to keep thinking because you've attended to the what's more primary and deeper. The other thing that can be done with thinking is that it works for people who are kind of new to all this, it works best if the thinking is really strong. And that is to identify if there's any physical sensation in the body that's connected to that thinking. So, you know, you can kind of see it in other people sometimes. If they really start thinking, come in, their eyebrows kind of bunch all up and their eyes squint, or their jaws kind of lock, or even their posture change, they put their head on their hand on their chin, or, you know, they're kind of like thinking, or they're leaning forward, or you feel certain tension. But you can feel that in yourself, even if you don't move from the outside. Sometimes you can feel some different parts of the body energized, agitated. And to feel what that is sometimes, and then to feel it for a while, and then relax it. Because if you're holding tension in your body, that tension is a trigger for more thinking. But if you let go of your thoughts but don't relax the tension, it's, you know, that the thoughts will keep coming back. So to notice where. And there's something that I call the thinking muscle. And some people can feel this. There's some place in the body, often in the head, maybe kind of in the so-called brain area, where there might be some pressure or tension or pulling or tightness or contraction. It could be very subtle, it could be very strong, that you can really feel it's connected to your thinking. And take a little while just to feel that. And then as you exhale, relax, as if it's a muscle, relax the thinking muscle. And then probably less forcefulness around your thinking. And it's easier just to let it drift away. Make some sense? So the basic idea of mindfulness of thinking is that you would start with your breathing in meditation and keep that as the default. Stay with your breathing. But if the thinking becomes more predominant, more compelling, or you get caught up in your thoughts, if it's relatively light, kind of not so important, kind of lightweight kind of thinking, just let go and come back to your breathing. Come back to your breathing. But if it persists, or if it's stronger, or you know, it just keeps reoccurring or something, then let go of the breathing and turn your attention and be mindfulness of thinking without any hurry. Hopefully without any attempt to try to get rid of it or stop it. At this point, stop trying to let go of it. Just let it be. And try to look at it as if you're listening to someone else talk. And you're just going to listen to them and pay attention to the tone of their voice and the emotional quality and just kind of watch it and see. Or if you think in images, it's kind of like you start studying the movie that this on the screen. What's the mood music? What's the pace? What is this like? What's happening here? And as we see it more clearly, then some people find it helpful to just quietly in their mind a few times name it for what it is. Don't think about the name very much. Only if it's obvious, you can just simply say thinking, or planning, or fantasy, or remembering, or something like that. Sometimes a more accurate note like that kind of pops the bubble or kind of pops the seduction or the pull into it more easily. And then if it still persists, then look around and see, what is there any emotion connection to it? And if there's an emotion connected to it, then feel it, do a mindfulness of emotion. Feel it in your body. Look around and see, are there any physical sensations connected to that thinking? And if you're thinking really strong, if you just robbed the bank and, you know, you sit down here at IMC to meditate, chances are you'll be racing, your thoughts are racing, and you can, a lot of energy, and you can kind of feel in your body where that is. And then kind of feel that and be present for that. Maybe relax it and settle it if you can. And if thinking fades away or no longer compelling or recedes into the background, you can just let it be in the background and then turn your attention back to the breathing and start again. Make sense? So that's the basic idea, the basic instruction. What I'd like to do a few minutes with you is to do a little guided tour of thinking with you. So you get more familiar with the terrain. Because many people haven't really studied their thinking. So I'm going to direct your attention to notice different aspects of thinking, and as it is for you. Anything that you notice in response to my questions or my direction is okay. It's all good to notice what's going on. And just kind of, if you need to, just relax. And if you don't understand, what I suggest to you to do doesn't make sense to you, just hang out and wait until something does make sense. Don't worry about it. We've been sitting a little bit, especially people on the floor. If you want to stand for 30 seconds and stretch and kind of so you can feel more comfortable for a little meditation time. So, sitting upright in a calm, alert posture. And probably for this exercise, maybe alert is more important than calm. Because we're not really using, this next meditation or guided instruction is not really meant necessarily to relax you, but rather to just to kind of explore, to be explorers, to investigate something. So close your eyes. And take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, settle in again here into your body, into your chair, your cushion. So then, this is going to be a guided exploration of your thinking. So you can bring your attention to thinking. And if your thinking fades away during this exercise, you probably don't have to wait too long before it comes back. And so first, can you notice whether you think mostly in words or mostly in images? Or is it a combination of both pretty evenly? And if you're thinking in words, like if there's an inner voice, what's the tone of that voice? What's the emotional tenor or quality of that voice? And if you think in images, what's the mood or the emotional tenor of the image that's there or the screen? And if there is a mood or a tone or emotional quality, is there some sensation in your body that is associated with that? Do you feel that mood or emotion someplace in the body? And if you do, take a few moments just to feel it there, allowing it to be. And as you notice your thinking, how interested are you in your thoughts? Or how strongly or weakly are you pulled into them? Are you pulled into them pretty closely, or do you feel there's some distance between you and the thoughts? As you notice your thinking, where in the range is your thinking in the range of between calm and agitated? Either way is fine. Just notice how it is for you. In the range between strong and weak, how strong or weak do you think your thinking is? So as you're thinking, if you think in words, is there some place where that inner voice is speaking or where the loudspeaker is? Is there a location for that thinking? If you think in images, is there a location where those are projected, like a screen? And if there's a location for thinking, can you feel or sense that the thinking is just a small part of who you are? You're much more than that. The location of thinking is a subset of the whole. Can you identify any physical sensations in your body that seem somehow connected to your thinking? It could be subtle, little physical pressure or tension, or a little bit of energy, something in your body is energized. Maybe it's has something to do with the way your head might be tilted a little bit. And if there's any physical sensations that seem connected to thinking, see if you can take a deep breath and relax, soften as you exhale. And then finally, see if you can notice what your relationship is to your thinking. What attitude do you have about it? What kind of involvement do you have? Are you interested? Are you aversive to it? Bothered by it? Do you believe your thoughts? Do you like them, not like them? What kind of relationship do you have to your thinking? And is there some way that you can simplify that relationship? Just let them be boats going down the river, You're on the shore. You don't have to be in relationship to them. You don't have to be involved or connected. The mind just makes thoughts. And you can just be aware. And then to end, you can take a few long, deep breaths, feeling your body. And when you're ready, open your eyes. So for some people, their relationship and their way they live in the world of their thoughts is pretty integral to who they are, pretty deep. It's a lot of very important issues, emotions, attitudes about life, ideas, understandings of who we are, kind of come into play around the whole domain of thinking. And so it's a good area to pay attention to with a lot of respect, a lot of compassion and care, and not to be dismissive of it or think that somehow it's bad or wrong or something, but it is something to bring attention to and become wise about. And as we become wiser, to have a wiser and freer relationship to our thoughts, so we have more ability to choose what we think and more ability to leave some thoughts alone and have ability to pick up the ones that are useful to think. But most importantly, to learn that we are not our thoughts. We don't have to identify with them or use our thoughts as some way to define who we are. Thoughts just come and they go. They're not inherently who you are. And every thought that you have does not need to be believed. Some people think that every, you know, if they're thinking it must be true. But it can't, so to be mindful, to be aware of thinking, is, for some people, it's kind of eye-opening. They start seeing themselves and understanding themselves in ways they never could be before, because they were always understanding through their thinking, and their thinking was the medium for understanding. But to turn around and actually study the medium, study this whole operating thing going on, the operating system, can reveal so much about ourselves. You can discover layers and layers of your, what makes you operate, your software, what goes on. It's a great thing. It's very interesting. In meditation, we do all this in the service of becoming more peaceful, more calm. So you want to be very careful that if you're doing mindful of thinking, that you're not thinking more about it. Mindfulness is not thinking. Some people think that the two are the same. Mindfulness is it moves you to places of quiet, quiet observation, quiet seeing. So would anybody like to share some comments about what was surprising in that last meditation? Through the mic.
I thought it was kind of interesting when it got to like the relationship with my thinking, because when I first started thinking about it, it was like, this is really complicated. You know, sometimes my thoughts are really good, they make me feel well. Sometimes they make me feel terrible and I'm afraid of them. And, you know, I saw that this kind of connection between them, I could feel there's like this very close connection between my thoughts and my body, and they can go and interplay and feed off of each other, and then sometimes make this big ball of yarn that doesn't help anything. But it was interesting, yeah, just to sort of recognize how complicated it can be.
Yeah, good. Great, I'm happy. That's part of the point of this exercise, and so I'm glad that you see that. And the hope is that by seeing the terrain, seeing all the pieces of it, you're less likely when you're meditating to get swept away, be hooked in. Because you kind of see, you know, the things that we don't see tend to hook us. And so if thinking is just kind of like a simple, we think it's just a simple thing and we let go of it, we don't see all the hooks. And so all the things you saw, perhaps you started becoming wiser about the hooks. Okay? Yes, please.
Yeah, so when you said think about where you're holding the thought in your body.
Yes.
I saw that I was holding it in my jaw. Uh-huh. And then I relaxed my jaw. And my fist turned tight. So so it seems like I was just transferring the tension at various places in my body. And then I relaxed my fist, and then my wrist started moving funny. Like, started, you know, a little bit getting tensed. So
Wonderful. It's great to see all this, how it operates.
Is the goal to be a little bit more relaxed in the body and let the thought not affect the body?
Yeah, that's a nice goal. I think so. I feel a little bit hesitant to say that, though. I think, you know, the goal of mindfulness could be many goals, but I think that one of the things I like a lot is don't focus too much on becoming calm. It's certainly useful, but rather the focus is on understanding better what's happening. So not so much you're trying to analyze it, but just try to be present and just meet it and be present for it as it is. What is going on here? So for you, it's fascinating. Look, that's interesting. That you probably didn't know this about yourself, that it's going to come out somewhere. So get more curious. Get really curious about this, and just watch how it happens, and you know, and see how it moves all over, and see how many different parts of your body can get involved. Just get curious. But then as you get more familiar with it, see if you can understand where that force is coming from. The image I have, I don't know if it's your image, but my image, and listening to you, it's like a big fire hose is on, and it, you know, and if you block one, you know, the water is on. If you block one hole, it's going to come out another hose, you know, or, you know, no matter, you know, it'll find a hose to go out. But where is that pressure coming from? Can you go back to the beginning? And what's that? What's happening there?
Okay, focusing there instead of...
The symptom.
Yeah. I didn't focus today there. It's the thought, it's the emotion where the tension is coming from.
Yeah. So sometimes you don't want to relax too quickly. So you I guess you relaxed your jaw. Sometimes it's useful not to relax, but to really be present for that part of your body, because then something deeper can happen than something that would happen if you're in control trying to relax. Just be present. Get to know it really well. The idea of getting to really know what's there is probably will serve you better in the long term than learning how to relax. Make sense?
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm going to try.
If you ask a friend to come and massage your shoulders, they can relax, and that's nice. But if you sit in meditation with 10 shoulders and don't relax them, then slowly you might discover why they're tense. And that might be useful, because then you can take care of that elsewhere. You don't have to always go look for your friend.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Someone else. Yep. Yeah, here in the front.
I just wanted to share a wonderful experience that I noticed meditating it today. I came in with a lot of anxiety and a lot of little bit of tension, and once I started meditating, I could feel a little bit beginning a little more relaxed, and I could feel that weightlessness kind of floating, free and more relaxed, and I didn't want to stop meditating because as soon as I opened my eyes, all that I felt like all my thoughts and all my tension would come back again. So I just wanted to continue more of this meditation.
Great, wonderful.
Yeah.
Nice to hear that. Thank you.
So I thought it was really helpful for you to talk about how thoughts could either be words or images. I usually, when I try to sit, I always hear the words. But recently I started to just notice there were images, but I didn't know they were thoughts. I was just initially there abstract, et cetera. So when I was sitting here this time, since you mentioned they actually were thoughts, when there's just these random abstract patterns, I sat with that and was trying to figure out what that was. And then I could actually feel the emotion that was just kind of chaotic. Like there was just some like chaotic emotions going on. So then I just sat with that. And then actually just random images came up, like a movie. But the thing is, I guess when the thoughts are words, I know where it's coming from. Like it could be a conversation. It could be something. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's a thought. I know where it's coming from. But then I say thought and I release it. But then with these images just coming up and just being kind of random, I didn't really know what to do with it.
So now you can get deeper under the surface of them.
Okay. But I was, I just didn't know that was a thought. So
Great. Lovely. So one more and then we have to stop.
Is it okay to alternate sometimes the meditation, the regular sitting meditation like we do here with walking meditations? And can you give, if that's the case, can you give some recommendations on how to do the walking meditation?
Walking meditation is a great meditation practice, and it, some people find it works better for them than sitting meditation. It's basically the same practice in many ways, but rather than using the breathing as the default, as the home base for it, we use the alternating sensations of the feet as they walk. And some people find because it's movement, it's more coarse, it's more engaged, more involved, they feel they get much more, it's easier to stay present than if they sit. If we do meditation retreats in our tradition, we alternate about equal lengths of time of sitting meditation and walking meditation through the day in order to kind of keep it going. If you want, next week what I'll do is then if... I'll print up... We have a flyer, like these little flyers, little handouts, a handout on walking meditation. So I'll try to remember to print some up and you can read the whole instructions for it. Okay. So don't be bothered by your thoughts, but don't be seduced by them either. You don't have to believe every thought. You don't have to be your thoughts. Your thoughts don't have to be the master of you. You can be aware of thinking, and you can be aware of it in a very quiet, with a very quiet way, quiet observation. Just see it for what it is. And in that quiet kind of seeing it for what it is, you might learn how to be free, and it might also open up, and you see depths of who you are that maybe you didn't see before. And as you see those depths, you'll have greater access to deeper states of well-being and peace. That's a great thing. In its own time. If this instructions on thinking just seems too complicated for you, too much for you or something, or you can't really relate to it today, you're welcome to forget it. For now. It's quite effective just to meditate on the breath. If all you did was the instructions we did the first week, you go really far. And then eventually, as you settle in and get into it, at some point, it'll almost natural that you'll start becoming more aware of this world of thinking. And then, oh, Gil said some things. Oh, yeah, now I can do it. So for now, if you didn't relate to it today, it's don't worry, it's fine. Next week is the last week. And next week I'll kind of synthesize all this, bring it all together as a whole and show you kind of how to work it together. And we'll talk a little bit about a very important aspect of this mindfulness practice is how to take it out of your meditation into your daily life, which is a very important part. And we'll also talk about how to go deeper with the meditation practice, ways of, some of the depths, some of the ways that we have of plumbing the depths of possibility with it. And then the following week, we follow this 5-week intro class with, I think it's a 4-week, 3 or 4 week, course that we call Beginner's Practice Group. And if you would like to have some continuity and some support to continue practicing after this 5-week course, you can just keep coming back on Wednesdays for a few Wednesdays. And some of the senior practitioners who teach here, will be here and we'll do some review of the instructions. We'll offer you some new teachings, new instructions, new kind of guidance. Be available to lots of answer questions. There'll be some discussion. It's a little bit informal. There's meditation as part of it. It's quite lovely. So if you want to get some support for when this course is over, that's a nice thing to do. Just then the Wednesdays right after this one. So thank you, and I hope that the world of thinking for you can become your friend.